is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. The Sunday Funnies. You remember those comic strips when you were a kid and you get the newspaper out on the front lawn and they had it wrapped in the comics and you'd read those? Well, they were funny as hell, right? Well, we've got our own version of the Sunday Funnies today. And for some people, not so funny. For others, they're just laughing all the way to the media bank there. So, and then you've been following this story with Jeffrey Epstein. Pretty sad American tale. The Epstein autopsy is out. And of course, the conspiracy people will be taking this one for decades. We'll talk about that later. Let's get to the top stories now. And we'll welcome on Dennis Santiago. He's an American strategist, a philosopher and patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Joining us in the top stories is Linda Martinelli. Linda's an entrepreneur and owner of President Reforma Graphic Print Source. Both Dennis and Linda are columnists here on America Out Loud. And Linda hosts an amazing show, Talking While Married, which is kind of a interesting approach to life, don't you think, people? Well, listen, let's start here with the top story here, and that is Israel. The stories of Representative Omar Antalib being denied entrance into Israel initially here. So this is a wild story that has been bouncing around here now for a few days here. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blocked Tlaib and Omar from coming in because they support the BDS, this movement against Israel and boycotting, and pressure was put on to deny them. President Trump got involved in this, of course, and never ceased to miss a good opportunity. But part of the strategy here for many is that President Trump is positioning Omar and Tlaib at the top of the 2020 election campaign. Dennis, is this a good strategy, I mean, for Trump to position Tlaib and Omar? He wants them to be the face of the race in the general election, which is why he got involved in this. First of all, should he got involved in this one here, or should he have stayed out of it?
He was even more involved in this one. So on a political side, yeah, Trump does need to have the Democratic Party split in half.
Well, he's doing that successfully.
And that's because it's primary season, and the Democratic Party is it's basically two globs that don't like each other. So there's that. The other thing that's going on with it, more to the point of this rejection, is the agenda of the Squad, as these women have come to be called. With regards to Israel, is basically they're on the losing side of something that's going on. It's bigger in the Middle East, in that we've been building a coalition with the Israelis, the Saudis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, and now the United Arab Emirates. It just came out recently that there have been secret negotiations between Israel and the UAE, and they're all coming together because they have one common enemy, Iran. So this enemy of my enemy is my friend thing that is part of the Middle East for a very long time is coming to fruition. And Israel serves as the muscle for any coalition in the region to blunt Iran, because they have the best military in the place. So, you know, bottom line, I fully expect that the money behind all of these relations are shifting, and I would not be surprised if CARE shifts sides somewhere along the way, away from the Palestinians and over to this coalition.
Wow, that's an interesting prediction there. I that would surprise me, but we'll see. That's an interesting prediction there, Dennis. Wow. First of all, the Israeli Interior Minister came out, and they then changed their approach, and they said, well, they're going to let Tlaib come in, specifically, not Omar, What's interesting, Linda, about this whole story is that Tlaib and Omar could have went with a delegation from Congress. They could have went just recently on a trip, but they denied that trip because they wanted to go on their own. Now, that's because many folks believe they wanted to get involved and push this BDS, the boycott there against Israel with the Palestinians, and get in the mix of a political jam there. Of course, they're a lot of reports on their anti-Semitism remarks have got them in trouble here. But the Israeli Interior Minister came out, and they actually changed and were letting Tlaib in to see the grandmother. And she says, this could be my last opportunity to see her, is what Tlaib put out on Twitter there. She then comes out, Linda, and says, silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants from me. Speaking of a grandmother, it would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in, fighting against racism, oppression, and injustice. Wow. That was the tweet there from Tlaib, and she will not be going. What do you make of it?
Well, standing against everything she believes in, here's what she apparently doesn't believe in. Loving her 90-year-old grandmother is something that she doesn't believe in. These two women were going to go over there on a propaganda trip. That's all that they were going to do. And they were sponsored by a terrorist group, BDS, and they were going to meet with them. But they had no meetings with anybody from Israel while they were there. This was just a big ruse and a big publicity thing that they wanted to do because they absolutely hate Israel. They hate Jews. They are anti-Semitic. So unfortunately, our media is completely complicit with this storyline that they're promoting here, and it's not right. I mean, people really need to see through what they were doing. They want to cause chaos. They wanted to go over there and, you know, make some political statement. This really had nothing to do with the grandmother, as you can see, because exactly. There's nothing that would stop me from seeing my grandmother as far as any political reason.
Yeah, everything they seem to do in this case, Linda, you're right, seems to have a political motivation to it. What was really unprecedented with this whole thing is that, you know, they are two current members of Congress, and typically you don't have an ally like that, and certainly Israel at the top of that deny members of Congress. That's where the funny business comes in. Well, Kamala Harris comes out and she says, I don't believe any nation should deny entry to elected members of Congress. Period. And that really was where the rubber met the road there and where the problem became. So I think you can argue that point, but Dennis, an interesting juxtaposition of this thing might be, what do you think of the United States? What do you think if we should let members of the Iranian Congress come in and speak at the Lincoln Memorial, perhaps, against the government, our government? Would that be permissible, you think?
Here's the reality. Tit for tat in diplomacy, and it's normal. This is normal. We play these games. Other countries play these games with each other all the time. Okay, and that's just the way how international diplomacy works. And sovereign nations have a right. We have a right in this country to control who gets in, who gets out, for diplomatic purposes, and bringing a domestic agenda from one country to another to use the other country as a foil is kind of frowned upon in that world, right? And that's what these people were trying to do. They were trying to go over there for a U.S. domestic agenda that basically takes advantage of things going on in the Middle East for them. You know, Kamala Harris, the woman's a dimwit, okay?
Yeah. The whole thing could have blown up in our face if they got over there and they really got ugly and they protested and they did things with BDS as an ally and their members of Congress. That also could have been a big problem, Dennis, if you think about it. Let me end this segment here, this story here with this. You'll love this, Linda. President Trump's tweet, real quickly, Representative Tlaib wrote a letter to Israeli officials desperately wanting to visit her grandmother. Permission was quickly granted, whereupon Tlaib obnoxiously turned her approval down. A complete setup, the president says. The only real winner here, drumroll please, is Tlaib's grandmother. She doesn't have to see her now. Oh my golly. Linda, what do you make of that tweet?
Well, I totally agree with it. And, you know, Tlaib wasted no time in getting right back to the media and calling the people in Israel racist and bigots and Nazi-like, and that they promote apartheid. I mean, this is all that they want. They want those sound bites out in the public. And this is what she got. And I agree, the grandmother is the winner. Who wants a granddaughter like that?
Interesting. Wow. We'll come back more later on in the program and talk about that, because it's interesting, people, how some people like the president's tweets when he cuts like a knife there. So fascinating anyways. Listen, I want to talk to you both about the Fox News poll that shows President Trump is losing to Biden, Warren, Sanders, and Harris. And of course, that sounds like a DC legal firm of dimwits, and probably could be. Now the president has been becoming very loud about Fox News lender in recent weeks here, because they've been doing things like this and getting under his skin. And the president's been calling Fox News out quite a bit now, we find. But this poll shows the president losing. Have we learned nothing about polls in this country at all since 2016, Lynn?
Oh, I guess not. Malcolm, you know, this is way too early to be doing this kind of stuff. I mean, we are a year and a half out. It's ridiculous to be doing this now. I just can't even imagine another year and a half of poll after poll after poll. Look at the numbers. Look at Trump's rallies. Look at Joe Biden's rallies. Look at every other Democrat's rallies. I mean, that's going to tell you the story. But the story has a long way to go. There's a lot that can happen between now and then. I just don't even think that they should be doing this at this time and just ginning up the public with all this, you know, just rhetoric going on. It's not important at this point in time. Let's just get the facts out and see what people can do for our country. That's what's important.
Yeah, what you say there is so important, because you say ginning up the public. That's exactly what I believe, Dennis, these polls do. I think Linda hit it right on.
The poll makes perfect sense, okay? Because here's the reality of the world right
really?
Now. People have a very strong opinion about Donald Trump, okay? So universally, you go across the country, they know the guy. He's president, right? He's been president for a while now, and people have formed opinions of him. People have almost no opinion about the reality of the Democrats. And so you got this big glob. Well, when you're in the big glob phase of your opinion making, you tend to be, the numbers tend to be on the upside. The reality for the Democrats is they also know that come the start of the primaries, their party is very, very split. There's going to be very hard feelings as that primary goes on between the progressive left and the center Democrats, and they're going to go fight each other. And the end of it, the big problem for them is how many people will be so disgusted with what happens in their primary process that they're not going to go vote. Okay, so the get out the vote is very predictable for Donald Trump at this point, and it's easy to measure. So what these polls are basically doing, and the numbers and statistics are pretty accurate, is basically reflecting the fact that the United States has a very well organized opinion about one side of this upcoming election, and a very nebulous opinion of the other side of this upcoming election. And that's just reality. And you know what? It's reflected in the numbers. It doesn't really mean a thing.
And it all also depends who you're polling. Clearly, people got to realize it's who you're asking the question to and how you ask the question. Anyways, polls are they're very odd that way. Listen, I want to turn and go overseas a moment and talk to you about Hong Kong and China. This is really becoming a problem here. So you got to remember that it was 1997 when the British gave up control of that lease from China, and the control went back to China more or less. But there was an agreement that 50 years out, they were going to stay an autonomous country I don't even know what you want to call them at that point, Dennis, because they really weren't even a country anymore. And that's what I think has really got the Hong Kong people. They're losing their identity, and they're losing their independence, and they're losing their freedom. And it all comes under this extradition law China is trying to pass. Slowly but surely, they are taking control of Hong Kong because they work long term on this thing. But really, as things are now, protests are in the streets, and we're talking millions of people, and things are getting very ugly, and China has amassed troops right across the shore there. What do you think happens? I mean, let me put it directly, specifically to you, the most difficult question about this. What can the United States do to stop this from happening to Hong Kong?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, I'm kind of on China's side on this one.
Wow. All right.
What precipitated this whole thing is some guy from Hong Kong committed a crime in China. And there's no extradition treaty between China and Hong Kong because China's been trying to keep them independent. So they're trying to put something in place so they can get this guy over to China to try him for this crime, which turns out to be, you know, kind of a major deal. And the people in Hong Kong are going, no, no, if the guy runs here, then he's safe. It's like sanctuary city stuff, okay? We don't like the sanctuary city stuff going in the United States. This is kind of like sanctuary city stuff in Hong Kong, all right? And the bottom line is, I think the Chinese were in the right to basically say, hey, we need some sort of extradition thing for these kinds of crimes that are going on because we have a lot of commerce going back and forth. We have a lot of people going back and forth. And so we need to put something in place. They tried to accommodate it, and now it's blown up. And at this point, the people in Hong Kong are so deathly afraid that the communist Chinese are going to change Hong Kong that any tiny thing that is a give becomes something to explode about. They're, you know, they're as confirmation bias crazy as we are with some of the stuff that we do here. And, but no, I, you know, I'm kind of like the Chinese are being very, very patient with the Hong Kong people right now and basically say, look, we just want this guy so we can try him.
Do you think they send their troops in there?
You know, it depends on how bad the rioting gets, but
it's going to get bad.
It is bad now. Okay. Mm-hmm, and, but the Hong Kong law enforcement authorities, I mean, they're not a small, bunch either. Yeah, and they're trying to keep it under control. The Chinese are there. They're sitting on the other side. You know, the Chinese are kind of bludgeoning when they come to say, hey, you know, we really want this guy.
So they're
parking tanks and stuff on the other side of the border. And ultimately, here's the bottom line. That's China's part of the world, okay? And we ceded that to them. The British ceded that to them. Mm-hmm. And if they see it in their interest that in the end they cannot resolve this peacefully, they're going to move. And there's not a darn thing we can do about it because it's their country.
Well, there it is. There's the tough answer to that question, Linda. And that question, I want to follow up with you in just a moment, Linda. First, let me ask that tough question right up front. Is there anything that you think the United States can do to stop that?
Well, I think that we are doing what we can do. I think that President Trump has suggested that President Xi speak to them, go talk to them, go try to work this out. You know, there's not a lot else we can do. We can work on the tariffs and we can, you know, threaten business. But I agree with Dennis that's not really our place to do. The people in Hong Kong right now, I think, are upset about more than just this extradition thing. I think that they're upset about that they've been slowly losing little tiny pieces of their autonomy one at a time. Mm-hmm. And I think that this just was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. So now what we've got is we've got people rioting all over. They're not in one place. They're rioting in a number of places. So to send troops in their narrow streets would be kind of difficult. And I do think that President Trump acting as a little bit of a mediator can be helpful mm-hmm. in trying to get these two to come to some agreement. I don't think it's unreasonable to have extradition of a criminal like that. I think that what Xi was trying to do maybe was too broad for what the people of Hong Kong would accept. But, you know, I mean, people are talking about that President Trump could say that if Hong Kong people, which is a vibrant, bustling, economically sound country, if they want to come over to the U.S. and, you know, we'll take all of their knowledge. I mean, that's kind of a threat to President Xi. I don't think we should go there at this point. I think that's a card on the table maybe for later. But right now, I really think that President Trump should help more keep the temperatures down and get the two to talk and see if they could come to some agreement.
Yeah. There's actually talk potentially of President Trump meeting with Xi a little sooner on this particular topic. I'm not sure that's going to happen either, seeing that relationships with the United States and China is pretty torn right now. However, what you're seeing right now with Hong Kong is you're seeing the future come a little sooner. That's what's happening. And that's sad to many people. But quite frankly, we knew in 97 when the British had to, you know, let this go, that Hong Kong would never be the same again when it was given back to China in 97. And we're seeing the future come a little faster than many like. Hong Kong being one of the most, as you say, bustling markets and just an amazing economy, one of the top forces in the world, and certainly the top in Asia there. I have to tell you, Hong Kong's future does not look very bright, sadly. And when you have a communist country like this and a repressive regime right there, it's not a positive future, I have to tell you. Real estate won't be quite the attractive measure out there, probably moving forward here now. Sadly, it's the way of the world, people. Let's bring it back here and talk about some of the churches in this very unique story where we see they are now wanting to, there's a group that wants to arm the parishioners in the church and get them, because of this, in the wake of all these mass shootings. So Doug Walker, the founder of the Interdenominational Fellowship of the Parks Church, told the Associated Press, it wasn't one specific mass shooting that inspired this partnership with Sheepdog Defense Group, but the trend that made him recognize that, you know, they could have people at these churches and arm the congregants and train them to be able to defend against a potential mass shooter. Is this a good idea, Lynn? Should we be doing this in the churches?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. And by the way, my husband and I own a school as well called responsetoactiveshooter.com. And one of the places that we do train is in churches, Malcolm. And it's one of the biggest places that we go. And it's where we also get the biggest crowds. So not only should the people in the congregation, which by the way, are just Americans, they're just people. So there's not anything unique about that. They're churchgoers, just that they are American people, that they're in a place that tends to get targeted. And not only should they learn how to use a firearm, and some people should carry them, they should also learn church building, you know, the ingress and egress areas. So how do they get in and out, and how what they can do in that building to save lives. So yeah, I think that this is a great idea. I think it's necessary. I think everybody should know what to do in case of an active shooter, and congratulations to them.
Right. It's the same thing we're seeing in the schools with arming the teachers. It's the same conflict, Dennis, but that's kind of what we've come to in our country. Do you like this idea? Is it a good idea?
I like the idea that people are beginning to learn that they have to defend themselves in the real world. I don't like the fact that we're getting to the point that that is a reality, because everything else has failed, but everything else has failed.
The alternatives are not very good, clearly. And maybe the future is the Wild West. I don't know. But being caught in one of these mass shooting sprees is not an alternative any of us want. But that's the way of the world, people, isn't it now? You know. And by the way, one last thought. These gun-free zones are ridiculous, and they should be banned. They should be illegal, because that's the problem and the attraction to these criminal and these evil-minded people. Talking about evil-minded, let's talk about Google. So Google is warning billions. Now, billions would include me and you people. So let's understand what billions means. When they got a B in front of it, that means all of us just got sunk. So they're warning billions of website passwords have been hacked. Well, isn't that sweet, huh? So they've been hacked, and we're talking username, passwords, all of that. So let me tell you all right now, all of you that have Gmail accounts and Google businesses, get in there and change your passwords and usernames and all of it. Remember I told you this. Get in there and change it, because this is a problem. And, you know, the bigger problem with this, Dennis, is all this information is out on the dark web, and it's being transacted out there. And now you're going to have other problems, because a lot of people have the same passwords they have on their bank account that they have on Google.
It is a problem. And more than that, remember your web browser, which if you use Chrome, that's also owned by them. It remembers your passwords for everything you go to. So yeah, this is pretty serious stuff. And the fact of the matter is, it's going to happen over and over again, because nothing's really secure. So be like the corporations. 90 days, rotate your passwords. Just do it.
Yeah, that's it. There's one last story in the top stories I want to talk to you about, Linda, and that is Greenland. This has been a story that has been trending for some days now, and it is quite interesting. So the reports are that President Trump was eyeing the purchase of Greenland, and a lot of people were aghast and thinking, oh, this guy, this bombastic president of yours, who does he think he is? And of course, Greenland is owned by Denmark, and they have come out, and their ministry says, no, we're really not for sale. You can visit, but not for sale. Now, this was some sort of a, some people said it was initially a joke that kind of came in through the White House, but then there were others who said it was, they were seriously looking at it. And by the way, Lynn, there's one of the big points of this, that in 1946, a United Nations gathering during the Harry Truman presidency, our Secretary of State then offered $100 million for the territory. That would have been a hell of a purchase, by the way. And also Andrew Johnson in 1867, the State Department inquired into buying Greenland and Iceland. What do you say to that, Lynn?
Well, you know, I learned a long time ago, Malcolm, if you want to buy something, you got to get in the game. And President Trump knows that better than anybody. So, you know, I don't think it hurts to throw it out there because you never know what answer you're going to get. Apparently, Denmark doesn't want to sell Greenland and don't know if Greenland wants to be purchased by the United States. But, you know, it opens a conversation and you just never know what you're going to get from a conversation. So I'm all for looking at anything that's you know, doable and possible and see where the chips fall.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people are laughing at this one, Dennis, and coming out here and there. But you know, I got thinking about this, and had we made that purchase in 46 or 1867, by the way, you think about how that would have changed the world, Dennis. And by the way, this Greenland is full of resources. I mean, you're talking uranium, you're talking diamonds, you're talking rare metals, you're talking, in fact, I was going to ask you, Dennis, if you wanted to put our money together and we buy it.
I'd love to. Here's the backstory behind that whole thing. China had offered to build three airports in Greenland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's really going on here is that the U.S. and China are beginning to compete. It's the 21st century. This is the big competition that's going to go on for the rest of the 21st. Mm-hmm. And China made a move to increase their influence in Greenland, which basically increases their influence with Denmark, which gets them into influence with the EU. We countered and said, no, don't let them build those airports, okay? So it's turned into kind of this back and forth game between the US and China over who gets to control. You know, we're playing, global domination here. Mm-hmm. And so our latest thing is go like, well, we could just buy it. But basically what we're doing is we're putting a marker there that basically says, no, the United States does see a national interest mm-hmm. in making sure that China does not dominate Greenland.
Yeah, and it's more than just China. Russia has a lot of interest in Greenland as well. Now, think about that, people, in these terms. You talk that the resources and the size of that country, and you're talking about world domination in the future of, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 200 years from now. And now you've got Russia that's interested, China that's interested, and the United States that clearly is interested. And here's the thing. Right now, Denmark can't really afford Greenland. It's costing them a lot of money, and they've expressed that. And they're not doing as well out there, clearly, as they would like to be doing. So, I don't know. That kind of leaves it very interesting, doesn't it, now, as to the future of Greenland here. So, well, listen, a big thank you to Dennis Santiago, Linda Martinelli. So, let's turn to the old Sunday Funnies. Stay right there. More Viewpoints in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Okay, so I've been telling you about the Sunday Funnies, and again, I think of that as a young boy. In fact, I used to deliver newspapers, if you can believe that. Little Malcolm, the newspaper delivery boy. I did that as a young lad. And I remember the Sunday funnies and the cartoons. Remember that? You'd get the ink all over your hands. One time we used to actually read the newspaper in our hands. Imagine that now, huh? Mm. Not so much many of us doing that anymore. But the Sunday funnies really is all of this outlandishness that's happening and all of the comments that are back and forth, more so against the president, I guess. Let's talk about that now on a very interesting panel discussion here. And I'd like you to welcome on, please, Jim McKay joins us. Jim is a political analyst, a commentator, producer here at America Out Loud, a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications. Joining us back here is Dennis Santiago, as you know, and Linda Martinelli. Let's have a discussion, Jim, Dennis, Linda, about, well, how funny the funnies are, really, you know? So let's take a look. One of the most recent things, and I want to play a clip here for everybody. Let me play this audio clip and listen to Bill Maher go off and wish on a recession for folks. Listen to this.
So please bring on the recession. Yeah. Sorry if that hurts people.
All right, so you can see in the clip that Bill Maher, he wants a recession. Of course, you got to remember now, Jim, Bill has over $100 million net worth hanging around to play with. So a recession isn't going to bother him too much. But he says, and I quote, "So please bring on the recession. Sorry if that hurts people. By the way, I'm hoping for a recession because that's the one way you get rid of Trump, is a crashing economy. So please bring on the recession. Sorry if that hurt you. Either root for a recession or lose your democracy." So, Jim, Bill Maher is saying that we're going to lose the democracy if we don't get this recession. And what do you think? Good idea?
No, because I think if we leave the Democrats in and they take over in 2020, we will definitely lose the democracy because, I mean, you have a half a dozen socialists out there running and they're calling for revolution. So Maher isn't funny at all. He's not sarcastic. It's out and out political port for the Democratic Party.
Jim, you know what's going to happen here, and I'm gonna predict something to you now. As the 2020 election comes into play here now, and let's go with the idea that without seeing anybody else come out of the woodwork, President Trump wins 2020. Let's just suggest that. Can you imagine, Jim, what the next 4 years are going to be like? If you think they were off their rocker here in the first 4 years, just take a ponder. Give me a guess, Jim, as to what you think the next 4 years are going to be like.
Definitely Prozac sales are going up tremendously, that's for sure.
I'm with you. Let's get an opinion from Linda Martinelli. Linda, pick up on that a minute, because I got a few comments I want to throw at you in a moment here. But think about that, Linda. I know you talk about this in terms of Ron all the time on the show and on the program and write about it. But you think there's a Trump derangement syndrome in the first 4 years. Can you visualize the second 4 years, if there is a second 4 years?
I can't wait to see it. The Trump derangement is absolutely crazy. And all the things that they say that are funny but not funny is just, I just don't even understand it, because there's so much untruth in what they say. And I just don't even really get the mindset where they're coming from and why they hate this man so much. I mean, he's really done what he said he was going to do. He's done good things for the country. We're in a good direction. And why you want to take it in the direction of Venezuela, I just have no idea.
Let me read you a couple of comments here from this Bill Maher post I told you about, which is out on YouTube, by the way. You can hear that as well there. But Dan says, the left in 2008, Rush Limbaugh says he wants Obama to fail. Wow, what an un-American fool. We should all hope the president succeeds. The left in 2018. I hope the president fails and millions lose their jobs and homes. You know, to answer your question, Linda, this is all about ideology. That's what we're talking about here now. This is about whether you like the ideology of a Trump presidency, or you like the ideology of an Obama presidency, or exactly what kind of a future you're looking at for the United States. And there's a history of this here with a lot of these comments here. Dennis, what do you say?
I say that Bill Maher very much represents a group of people in this country that are just so angry that they lost, that they want everyone else to feel how bad they feel about it. I don't. I'm sorry. You know, like, I'm not going to go on Prozac for the next 4 years. I am drinking fine bourbon and watching the United States sail have a good time.
Well, that's what Linda said. She said she's looking forward to the next 4 years. Let me read you this, Dennis, this other thing here. William says, unfortunately, Marr is correct in what he says. A recession is probably the only way to snap all these Americans out of their delusions and pull the rug out from under the normalcy bias. Trump is a cancer. That is, he wrote in a way American democracy. And the only thing that is keeping him afloat is the economy. For the short-term sake of the middle class and the poor, I hope there is not a recession. But for the long-term sake of American democracy, I hope there is one. Well, you can see the mindset, Dennis, behind this ideology and what I'm speaking about. People really fear, and I'm talking not Bill Maher now, I'm talking about Americans, really feel that President Trump is a bombastic president and is out of control and is going to fail and hurt our democracy. Any truth to it?
No! Oh, come on. Yeah. Is he bombastic? Yeah. Is he out of control? Yeah. But you know what? Winning. Come on. let's just get real here. What they don't like is the fact that the guy is winning. All right. He's building coalitions around the planet. He's negotiating with countries in ways that have never been before. And there are actually changes going on inside the country. People are pushing against the guy left and right, and he's still making progress. What these guys want is they want to hit a reset button that sets it back, so we're looking for chickens to put in the pot. You know what? Wow. I'm not into that. Wow. I kind of like the fact that we're doing okay.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, I got to tell you what. It's hard to follow that up with what Dennis says. He's almost left me speechless.
You know, he's right on point. You know, all these people in Congress and especially in the media, they're all kids that grew up, went to Ivy League schools, never worked really a day in their life, got it all handed to them on a silver platter. And then 2000, they lost to Bush. And in 2016, they lost to Trump. And they've never gotten over either one of them. They just want to take their bat and ball, go home, and then take the bat and club you over the head with it.
Part of the challenge that we're seeing is, and my concern, Linda, is the, which I've been speaking about on our weekday program, The Voice of a Nation, is the middle part of the country, the independents, the moderates, the just left of center people who don't like anything they see on the left, and they don't want a socialist Marxist nation, thank God Almighty, but they don't really like the bombastic attitude and the approach of President Trump. I want you to listen to this quick montage, folks, from Trump at some of his rallies and thoughts and see what the media rails against. Listen to this.
I certainly don't incite violence.
Knock the crap out of him.
Like to punch him in the face.
I don't condone violence, and I don't talk about violence.
I would have done well, but I would have been boom, boom, boom. I'll beat that.
I don't know if I'll do the fighting myself or if other people will.
Maybe he should have been roughed up. Because it was absolutely disgusting what he was doing.
If you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of him, would you? Seriously.
Like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Now, what you listen there to and what you're hearing is what I call polytainment. Polytainment. And this is really the political and the entertainment circles coming together as one. You see, you got to remember something. President Trump is a showman. He is an entertainer. In fact, he was far more that, Linda, before he was ever a so-called politician. And quite frankly, he's not a politician either now. This is back to the old days where the framers said, the old days, like I was here or something, you know, Lynn? It's like the old days when the framers said, yeah, let's get regular American citizens in there. Why don't we get this bombastic businessman from New York? And well, I got to tell you what, Linda, that just has most of the establishment not having a good time, and they're not liking this here. But Trump kind of feeds into this with this, but like Dennis just put out there, too bad, so sad, take a seat at the back of the bus and shut the hell up. And what do you say?
Oh, totally agree. The thing that this country needed the most is not a politician, and that's what we got, and that's why we're moving forward, because you have somebody that understands economy, somebody that understands how money works, somebody who understands how to negotiate with the nations of the world, And our politicians, I swear, are people that just don't even know how to balance their own checkbook. If you look at the poll that just came out about how much money these people in Congress and the Senate make, and, you know, a Bill Maher and all these people that are yapping away, they are not the common people. And you then you look at the people at the rallies who are the everyday Americans. They love what Trump is doing. I disagree with the premise that people don't like how bombastic Trump is. I think that on the whole, we're loving it, and we're loving that we're standing up for ourselves and that we're saying what's right is right. And the thing that worries me, Malcolm, about what you said earlier in what we are saying when Obama was president is completely different than what they are saying now. Conservatives never stood in front of people's homes and wished that somebody would stab them in their heart. It's a totally different rhetoric right now, and it's ugly, and it's not funny, and it's dangerous, and conservatives never did that, so they can't make that comparison.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a nerve with what you say there, Linda. And here's my real concern, and I say this sincerely. I think a lot of this pop cultural entertainment, or polytainment, as I call it, can get sadly out of hand quickly. There are a lot of deranged people out there, and I'm very serious when I say this. There's a problem of being some mental instability here, and people, they talk about guns and, you know, that sort of thing. But there are a lot of people even beyond that. And there's a lot of talk, like you take Johnny Depp coming out and saying he wants, you know, he says, when was the last time an actor assassinated a president? Of course, referring to the Abraham Lincoln program there. And of course, Robert De Niro has been just so ugly and so vicious with his comments and his four-letter words constantly against the president. But here's the problem. When you've got all these high-end celebrities, Dennis, out in, you know, out where you live, in that la-la land there, in West Coast land, here's the challenge that is worried. A lot of people take this stuff seriously, and there are a lot of people, you know, when Madonna said to blowing up the White House, there are people who take this stuff like real brass tacks here. I'm concerned that I think the president's life could be in, especially as you get into that 20 general election, and if he's reelected, I think you're going to have to ramp up the security, because there are a lot of loose cannons out there. And with all these people wishing him dead, that's a tough program, isn't it?
It is a tough program. And it's not just him. I mean, you know, like people have died. I mean, we have these mass shootings that happen in this country. I have been watching that stuff for a very long time, and I got to tell you, I think the main cause of all of that kind of violence is a breakdown in social culture that basically has it so that people think it's okay to say these outlandish things. And they say, well, you know, I'm just talking, I'm just expressing my opinion, I want the attention. You know, polytainment is about attention grabbing. It's acting. And the problem is, there's people out there that will take that. They're not actors. They're sitting there, they're extremely depressed, angry, and they're looking for a way to act on it. And what these people are doing is they're giving them clues as to what to do, and they'll act on it. Do not realize that attention actually is being listened to. It's dangerous.
Jim McKay, I'm going to give you the last word, brother, on this story here. How does this end? Does it end well?
I hope so. I hope the 2020 election turns out to actually be a landslide in favor of President Trump.
Brace yourself, put your seatbelt on, and grab a ticket to the movie here. Well, listen, big thank you here to Jim McKay, Linda Martinelli, Dennis Santiago. Well, this next story just is a story that's not going to go away, whether it's in life or death, and that is this Jeffrey Epstein, the despicable, evil pedophile, disgusting human waste story. The autopsy's out. They say it's a suicide. Other people are saying not so fast. Well, what do you think that one forensic criminologist might suggest it being? You'll find out that in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company Healthy Cell will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. Well, you've been watching this case here, Jeffrey Epstein, whether you like it or not. He's one of these stories that has captivated the nation for a lot of reasons. As I said to you, and in the previous segment, he was a despicable character. I mean, worse than human trash, really, when you look at it. What this man did with trafficking and his pedophilia ways and what have you. But his relationships go a long way through a lot of political circles. And, of course, that means you have a lot of conspiracies running around. Well, what's happened now is the autopsy has now been delivered, and it's been ruled a suicide. Not so many people are agreeing with that. We'll find out next if our next guest believes that this was the case or not. I'm hearing all kinds of things. So let's bring in Dr. Ron Martinelli. Dr. Ron is a retired police detective. He's a forensic criminologist. He's a national voice, and he is a big voice here on America Out Loud. His book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Please find that, friends, on Amazon and in the America Out Loud bookstore. All of our books are in that bookstore at America Out Loud for all of our experts and our guests. So please visit the store, take a look at some of the books, and check this one out, too, from Dr. Ron Martinelli, please. Okay, Dr. Ron, so Jeffrey Epstein, what a despicable character he was. You see the autopsy from the medical examiner comes out from this. This was like the Keystone Cops, this whole case here, buddy. I'm going to just set the mic aside here and let you go off on this thing. What happened? Was it suicide or was it potentially a homicide?
Well, you know, Malcolm, as you well know, and I'm also a certified medical investigator, and I work hundreds of deaths a year. And a lot of correctional deaths, or what we call in custody deaths, because obviously these people are incarcerated, they're in law enforcement custody. And of those deaths, quite a few of them tend to be hangings. And I will tell you that I read a lot of autopsies, just wrote read one last week from an ME out of Saskatchewan, and they get it wrong. Because in reality, it's all about the totality of circumstances. There have to be medical injuries that reconcile with both the mechanism of injury. In this particular case, it's a combination of ligature, and it's an elevated platform, which is a bunk bed, and it may be, in fact, velocity. Or how did this person hang themselves? Did they jump off the bed? Did they lean forward and hang? Yes, there's three different ways that you can hang yourself. Here's what I'm concerned about. When I take a look at an autopsy report like this one, and I see multiple fractures of the neck bones, that worries me when I compare it to everything that has been said so far as to how Epstein's body was found. If you remember, they state that they found the body with the ligature attached to the top bunk, and we'll talk all about that in a minute, and he was as if leaning forward, on his knees, leaning forward. That is a classic way to asphyxiate yourself. And if you remember many years ago, Robin Williams committed suicide the same way. He took a belt, he affixed one end of the belt around the doorknob in his bedroom, affixed the other part of the belt, which now becomes a ligature, around his neck. And then he's on his knees and he leans forward. So what happens when...
Is that hard to do, Ron, to oneself? Okay. Because you're really choking yourself. Is that hard?
It's extremely easy to do. Oh. And actually, it's a painless way of going. Oh. Because what happens is if the ligature is properly placed around your neck, Malcolm, and you know this, just real simple, basic anatomy, you've got... carotid arteries on either side of your neck, right? So they're bilateral, okay? And what happens is when you constrict using a ligature, when you constrict or compress those arteries, you cut off oxygenated blood to the brain, and that causes unconsciousness. Martial artists like me, the guys you see on MMA, police officers learn how to do this. I teach it in my law enforcement classes. It's called a carotid restraint or a lateral vascular neck restraint. Okay, once the person is unconscious, obviously the body becomes dead weight and puts more pressure against the ligature, and then the person dies from anoxia or a total lack of oxygen going to the brain, and they die. All right? So in this particular case, we have something that's been described when we first heard it on the news and described in the autopsy report, but yet now we have an autopsy report that says we have multiple fractures of the neck bones. The only way that you can have multiple fractures of the neck bones is from one of two things, either a drop hanging, and I'll describe that. A drop hanging is like what you used to see in the old days, right? You got the guy that's going to be hung. He's got a platform underneath him. They pull the platform out underneath him, and then there is velocity and weight of the body as it goes to the end of the rope and snaps the neck, right? And that is a velocity, but that's a drop hanging. In a jail, the drop hanging is accomplished by the person with the ligature around their neck up on the top bunk and then simply just dropping off, okay? Either jumping off or dropping off. And that would accomplish the fractures of the neck bones. I can get the fact that the hyoid bone, which is a very small bone within the cricoid cartilage, it's shielded by, and you can put, you know, your Adam's apple, you can put your hand up against your neck and you can feel your cricoid cartilage there. And inside of that vessel, so to speak, there is going to be the hyoid bone. I can see where you can crack that hyoid bone, especially in older people. Jeffrey Epstein was 66 years old. It wouldn't be unlikely to find something like that that happens even in a leaning forward type of hanging. Now, I've done a lot of research on hanging, and I just went back over this last week because I've been doing a lot of media work explaining this. And the most recent of the three research projects I read discussed almost 2,000 hangings, actually 1,746 hangings. And out of those 1,746 hangings, we had one broken hyoid bone and no multiple fractures. So just consider that for a minute. In a case like this that's so high profile, we would do a secondary scan, and we use a very complicated machine called a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. Try to say that when you've been drinking, okay? Well, we do a GMS, and that gives us a secondary scan for any other types of drugs that might have been snuck in there. That hasn't been accomplished yet, or at least it hasn't been released. But Malcolm, here's what I look at as a forensic investigator. What's wrong with this picture? Mm-hmm. And so there are so many things wrong with this picture because we have the confluence of many things. Let me discuss them with you, and then, you know, let's have a discussion. So number one, we have the second most high profile federal prisoner in custody in the United States. The only other more important in custody prisoner is Guzman, right? From the drug cartel. Mm-hmm. But Epstein is right up there. He's the number two guy. Number two, we have a facility that they say in the past has been very secure. As a matter of fact, I think I heard Rudy Giuliani say something last week that they'd only had one prior hanging in 40 years.
Wow.
So this is the hanging we're going to have in 40 years? This is the second hanging we're going to have? All right. Number three, the guy had been in his cell 2 weeks ago. The guards heard a lot of ruckus in there. They go in there and they find Mr. Epstein with marks on his throat. Now, there's only two ways that you're going to have marks on your throat. Number one, you're going to put them there as if you tried to suffocate yourself, right? Strangle yourself, and that's not going to happen. And number two, somebody tries to kill you. So if you remember, his bunkmate before was a former police officer convicted of four counts of homicide that were all drug trafficking related. And so you have to take a look at that. The next thing, what, sleeping guards? They put him in, they take his bunkmate out. First of all, they take him out of medical watch, which is a 24/7 thing, and they put him in a cell all by himself. He's supposed to have a bunkmate. They remove the bunkmate the day before his death. Then they put him in a cell where they know the CCTV or the closed circuit television camera is broken. All right, look at all of those things. What are the chances you're going to take the second most important prisoner in the United States and put him in those circumstances?
So you're not buying it?
Not right now, I'm not. Now listen, no. As my listeners know on A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud, I am a forensic guy. I'm a fact finder. I am not a black helicopter's conspiracy theorist,
right.
But I am a competent forensic and medical investigator, and it is too premature to call this a suicide.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, his lawyers are not accepting the ruling as well. Now, the lawyers said they're not satisfied with the medical examiner's conclusions, and they urged more scrutiny of the jail. Can they demand an independent autopsy?
Well, they have to have standing. In order to make a request like that or make a demand like that, you have to have some sort of legal standing. You have to have a relative speaking for this person, a person that has the power of attorney speaking on behalf of the estate of the decedent, requesting to do that.
Dr. Rahm, what do you think about the people around him, like this madame that, and all these women he had that were going to get the young people and push it? I mean, your sense here, do you think other people get caught into this web?
Oh, sure. You know, when I was writing my doctoral dissertation, of all things I wrote it on was on prostitution. And I had a whole thing in there about prostitution and child and teenage prostitution. These people get caught up in this life. Of course, there's a lot of money being thrown around, and they end up being, the entourage for these very rich and very powerful people.
Right.
And they just lose themselves, and they, in fact, become pimps. And that's what this, and I think you used a good word, a madame, she's actually a pimp. She's going out and she's pandering. In other words, she is procuring women and young girls as to commit acts of prostitution.
A lot of people suspect, and a lot of people wanted him dead. So that kind of leaves this whole thing on the, puts it in the high speed lane, doesn't it? Think we'll ever find out? You think we'll know anything more on this thing, or is this it?
First of all, let me tell you something about the Virgin Islands, extremely corrupt United States territory, other than Puerto Rico, probably the most. But but I'm also a very forensic guy. I'm not trying to do any conspiracies here whatsoever.
And back to those islands that you're talking about there off near St. Thomas and all of that, to remind everybody, there's a lot of crime and corruption in a lot of these places. And you're seeing a lot of the reports lately in the news too about the Dominican Republic and things out there. But they're just unsafe for young people when a lot of these places they invite the kids in and other stuff. You just got to be really super careful here. On a good point, friends, that Epstein is no longer of this earth, and that's a good thing for young people for sure. But this case isn't going to go away anytime soon, it appears. And talking to Dr. Ron Martinelli here, it appears that it's going to be here for some time to come. And we'll see what happens with all of the facts and where this thing falls. What another great viewpoint in the books, people. Thank you to all of our folks here today on the program here. We invite you in during the week to the Voice of the Nation. Join us there during the weekdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. You know the rallying call. It's time to get involved and get loud.